Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 11, Relational Speak, the Antidote to Double Speak, an interview with Teokasin Ghost Horse from the Cheyenne River Lakota Nation. This is your host, Monk, and if you're listening last week, you'll realize that the show on education is postponed to a later date. And this is also the first phone interview show, so you may sound a little different, and you may need to adjust your volume. That's going to be coming up after the intro, of course. A little background on Teokasin. He is the host of First Voices Indigenous Radio, which is on its 20th, going on 21st year. It's on WBAI, which is also played online, WBAI.org, 9 o'clock Thursday mornings. And if you don't catch it then, you can check the archives or go to his website, firstvoicesindigenousradio.org. Put the link up on my website and the episode information. FVIR brings to the airwaves the experiences, perspectives, and struggles of Indigenous people who have been almost totally excluded from both mainstream and progressive alternative media. Teokasin writes, our purpose is to help ensure the continuance and survival of Indigenous cultures and nations by letting the people tell their own story in their own words and often in their own languages and ways of speaking. So it's wonderful to have him on today to help convey some of that Indigenous perspective. He's a survivor of the Reign of Terror in America, which is, some of that is the forced boarding schools. Sad chapter. You can look up more about that. Teokasin has had a long history of Indigenous rights, activism, and advocacy. He spoke as a teenager at the United Nations in Geneva, Switzerland, and ever since his UN work, he has been actively educating people who live on Turtle Island, sometimes called North America, and overseas about the importance of living with each other and with the Earth. Teokasin is also a master musician and one of the great exponents of the ancient red cedar Lakota flute, and plays traditional and contemporary music using both Indigenous and European instruments. And he does spoken word. One of his tracks on his album is just that, and that was made into a chapbook published by All Book Books called Redshift. Another of his books, Children of the Sun, Prosatry Unplugged, also proudly published by All Book Books, and some of his selections are in the anthology The Unoccupy Movement. He's performed at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine and Lincoln Center and Madison Square Garden, and as his bio states, he likes to be described as a perfectly flawed human being.
Okay, greetings, Teokasin. It's an honor and a treat to have you on Between the Lines. How are you?
Good. In Between the Lines. That's great.
Yeah, that's the name of the show. It's a lot about literature, but it also tries to convey what is, you know, between the lines, beyond the literature and beyond what words can say. So I think, you know, talking to you today will be very helpful to convey some of the Indigenous perspective. One example that I want to give, and then I want you to, you know, take it from there. When I came up with the title, Relational Speak, the Antidote to Double Speak, double speak, you know, is the deliberate language that distorts and disguises. And one example, an awful example, is the phrase friendly fire that's used for military, you know, media reports about who was killed or injured. But I think from what I've learned from you a little bit, the English language even and the educational process is in a way doublespeak. Like when I go to eat a string bean, typically I would say I ate a string bean, but when I think more like from the native perspective, it's that the string bean is coming from plant and it's nourished by earth and sun and water and air, and that's giving me energy. So how can you describe some of that relational way of language and thinking, and how that affects your writing?
Well, you know, I guess the phrase that people's heard about is what is above is also below. You can think about our language mm-hmm. being that same way. In Lakota, we have the word for human, I guess not human being, but see, we don't have a word for human being.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't exist, and we have we cha sha, which is we is we cha is basically the word for star,
uh-huh.
and sha is like a gift.
Oh.
So we are a gift of the stars. So we think about what is above is also below.
That's beautiful.
And what is below is also above, and in that way we have to relate to even those things we don't see out in distant galaxies or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or the space between darkness or
mm-hmm.
between light. And so our language is such that it is not commodifying or dualistic. You can't have it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get back to dualism a little later, because mm-hmm. that's where the English language extends from, and that's why we hear it in doublespeak or forked tongue. But when we think about relational values as Native people, as Lakota, and I can't speak for all Lakota
mm-hmm.
because, of course, we have a perspective, but when I think about it and the deeper meanings of the words, the relational value that we have, even Lakota, even who we are, is basically mitakwe oyase. We are related to everything. We are related to all things.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with possessive way of relating to things. It's just that you notice things are alive. And when you are, I would say, when you are feeling lonesome and isolation and things in English and the mind, that can take you to those places of tyranny, I guess, or agony or whatever the word would be. There's often this language that we don't have. In my case, I don't have to fall back on, because it's always with me.
Right, right.
It's for me. I can fall away from the English language, because it's
mm-hmm.
easier to fall away from in English rather and talk about the lack of
right.
in English. And so when I'm on I guess you'd say online with Lakota. You're really, when you're understanding that, well, see, this is the biggest question you've asked me so far, Monk, is when we're talking about relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We have relationship with things in English that are dead, but we don't think that they are dead in Lakota, because
right.
everything seems to have life.
It has energy, yeah. It's so much like that phrase I've quoted to you from Alan Watts, where he says, the house is housing, and you've described that when I've heard you give talks. The floor is flooring. Everything is animated, but the language, we tend to isolate it.
Oh, Alan Watts said that too?
He's got a phrase, yeah, I can find the quote somewhere. It's like, the stars are starring, and it's about turning a noun into a verb.
Oh,
and he reminds that we have these grammatical things called noun and verb, but really, when you lift a glass to drink, the glass is a noun, but it's in motion.
Mm-hmm.
So the actual thing that's happening is not, it's a noun and a verb combined.
Oh, okay.
And that seems to get at what you describe as the Lakota indigenous perspective.
Yeah, that's basically it. So with you're relating to everything, of course, then that's the way of saying it in English, that everything is alive and having creation.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that we tend to understand it hierarchically, you know, what is good, what is bad. Mm-hmm. In English, where in Lakota, you can't understand things that are good or,
right.
or you know, it yeah. kind of, if you can see it a roundabout way, it narrows your choice.
Right. Yeah.
In other words, things are objective and subjective in English and hierarchically understood and structured and isolated and things like this, but when you think about Lakota, there's less control, I guess you'd say, more of a wildness, which is with spirit. So you understand that each little thing requires an asking of, just respecting that something that you use is in inherently with energy. So you use something, or you ask to use something, or to take something, or to give something, I guess I would say, in great respect and honor, that something is needed to be used by someone else or another energy. And that energy reflects back on you. If you misuse something, it'll mm-hmm. come back on you. I think a lot of other religions are like that. But we got to remember, we do not have a religion.
Right.
And we evolved past religion in a way. So in that way, you know, relationship in a language has to do with just about everything. I know it's very hard to explain it in this language of English to help.
Yeah, the language is so much, instead of, like you said, instead of saying, you did something wrong, you're a bad boy, it's another way to look at it is, no, you're just misusing the energy, or you were ignorant, or something. It's a less punishing way. It's a way that encourages people to learn rather than just punishes them. Mm-hmm. And that's my sense of a lot of the religiosity and the dualism, is it sort of enhances punishing people instead of teaching them how to learn.
Yeah, it does. I mean, everything seems to have a punitive value to it because it's based also on materialism. Now, it's interesting that materialism actually is coming from the maternal side,
mm-hmm.
that word maternal. And when we look at, the materialism, that the men had to go out and get things so that the woman could possess them in order to help a family get through whatever. So in that way, materialism is basically a feminine aspect of
right.
When things happened in a way where things got out of control and men could see that they could get more of this material for the women, the mindset just kind of went overboard in the power of being able to, I got more muscles than the other person, so therefore I can get more material, therefore I can breed more, and things like this. And that seems to be an ongoing, formula for a nation such as this.
Oh, yeah.
Other nations such as this country.
Yeah, what you just said seems, it sums up a lot of the problems today of the macho and the over material and all that. The way you described the whole bit you described at the beginning, the word holistic just seems to be as far as one English word that sums up all my relations. It's like it's holistic. It's seeing everything as connected.
Yeah. The quantum physics of it, the thinking process mm-hmm. is quantum physics. And again, as you know, Einstein had that E equals MC squared. Well, that's what we say. practically all nations here at Turtle Island, and we realize that with that prayer, in other words, they have other ways of saying it, I think in Hopi and things, but they're saying it in the same energy. When we mm-hmm. say Mitakui Oyase, we're all is a relationship, all is related. Then we're thinking about, okay, so this is why we cannot argue over God.
Mm.
We cannot. And this is why they had to ban our spirituality, our religion, our way, our Lakowi Choha, or the Lakota ways mm-hmm. of life. And so they had to ban that almost for over 100 years. And because they said, well, if you don't have a God, you must believe in devil. So it was that dualistic thinking applied to us.
All right. You led right into the next question I have. Last week, the show, I heard this Spanish proverb a while ago that basically translated as, God, free me from the man of one book. And I mentioned in the show that, you know, probably the, some of the most devastation on the planet has been Columbus and the settlers coming with their one book, at least, you know, the Bible in the way it was used. Not that there isn't something to gain from it, but you know, I wanted to hear from your perspective, as you know, more connected with people who have suffered from that oppression of the one book, and what that's about, and also the oral tradition of the indigenous.
Well, yeah, the difference between, I think, that book thing, and a lot of people think that because we Native people, a lot of us who haven't been influenced in the colonization of mm-hmm. Christianity, basically started by Columbus, all those C things that start with C seem to be a bad word for us, Columbus, Christ, colonization, you know, everything, airing capitalism coming down the line. For us, Kevin Costner, you know, all those C words are not a good thing for us. And, but it goes hand in hand. I mean, every word, every action that you, the Western world, the so-called Western world, follows still the same formula that's been outdated for almost 2,000 years now, because that time was the energy and light that came at that time, I suppose 2,000 years ago or so,
mm-hmm.
you know, was meant for that time.
Mm-hmm.
But what came out of that, basically, people say that it's timeless. Well, in a way, that light is timeless. Of course it is. The sun's still shining,
right.
And things like that.
Yeah.
But when you apply that fear, and put it in a book, and you take that fear around the world, and it tells you the instructions of what to do, well, you see that the man himself in that way of that book, or even the other books,
mm-hmm.
you see that they all came from the same loins, I guess you'd say, Abraham, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yeah.
They all came from the same place, and they're the ones who are fighting over whatever,
yeah.
who's true or not. And so, well, when we think about the relationship, Midakuyasi, the E equals MC squared, there's not room for us to be fighting over God. That's like the most arrogant thing that could ever happen in the lifespan of mankind,
right.
or humankind. And I think the question that you're posing is really, when you get into the dualism of that book,
mm-hmm.
it's always about the good versus the evil.
Right.
And the evil is eventually going to lose out and things like that. And it talks about, Lucifer,
right.
think that was the name, who
yeah.
fell from the sky, who fell from heaven.
Yeah, originally of light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's almost like, okay, so when they applied that aspect to a lot of Native nations here, like we have the woman who fell from the sky,
mm-hmm.
who we became, you know, half star and things like that. So
mm-hmm.
we talk about Wichasha. And they applied that to us, and they said, oh, that's Lucifer's people. So that's when they applied that to us, that automatically made us the evil ones. And so they were the good ones, because they were bringing the enlightenment over here. In that way. But at that time, Europe was practically dead, and that's why Columbus came out here with that Bible, and that's when the Enlightenment did begin over there, and because of the wealth of the Western Hemisphere, I think the 1%ers over there were able to garner more wealth, and in that way, it came down to where other people. There were more richer people, and therefore you could have more excursions out into the greater world, and that happened. So the book came with everything and had all the commands to
right.
do what it's doing from day one. When Columbus got here, he did the possession ceremony on those islands down there with the Taino and the Arawak and all
uh-huh.
the other Native people down there. And then, you know, of course, you hear that a few years later, that they read the Requiem, and I'm sure you know about that, right?
The Requiem. I know the phrase, but I'm not sure what the context.
Okay. The Requiem came, and basically it was a declaration after the papal bulls,
uh-huh.
that accompanied the papal bulls. This is the reason why it gave the Europeans more, well, false bravado to come out here and say, well, because we come with God, and they came with that arrogance that, you know, it was for the taking, because, you know, conquer all the land and
uh-huh. okay.
eat fruit and dominate whatever. And so the Requiem came out a few years later, and then basically wherever the Spanish came, the Portuguese came, those of the Roman Catholic faith or the Catholic faith came out here and read to the native people in their and not in their language, but the language of Spanish and English and
mm-hmm.
basically Portuguese. And they read that if you don't believe in our God, we are going to kill you.
Mm.
If you don't give up their land, blah, blah, blah. If you don't give up your wealth, blah, 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 we are going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't convert to Christianity, we are going to kill you. Now, you're talking to people who don't understand any Portuguese, English, or
right.
Spanish. And mm-hmm. so the native people didn't understand. So what happened is that they just, the next minute, they were slaughtering native peoples. And that was one phrase of two that came out of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of these things, even you hear it today, Monk, a lot of people say, well, that was not the true way. Jesus was not that way. And that could be true. But it's still, it's almost used, people use that book as an excuse to
yeah.
continue.
Yeah, I think that's the thing when people are always quoting and as if it's, you know, written in stone. I mean, some things, you know, when you go to boil water or whatever, there's a certain temperature, it boils, but when it comes to relating with people and doing certain things, not everything is written, you know, just because the book says. They have to be open to the moment and what's, you know, the spontaneity of what might work in a specific moment. I think when, you know, that the people always quoting the book, it's like their mind becomes not open to what's actually going on.
Yeah, and I think that because it's called blind faith or whatever
mm-hmm.
you call it,
yeah.
but it's almost like that they cannot think for themselves. They're not open to the quantum of the universe, which is all of the Creator, and the Creator neither being male or female,
mm-hmm.
but of energy. And I think that's where, first of all, when you put God as a male, then that really messes up
mm-hmm.
the female part
mm-hmm.
of creation stuff. And so we tend to ignore that the female is not powerful. Only the male is powerful, and if the female listens to the male, then, you know, that goes back to the materialism, the imbalance of the material, where the man understood that I'm bigger and I can bring more in, and I can, the more I bring in, the more, you know, women I can
right.
have type of mentality. So it's patriarchy all the way.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is also, you know, we go into the colonization that Christianity did to people. They put the fear. That's what the colonizations. But part of that, how to explain that is cologne, right?
Right.
Cologne is to clear out, and the colonization to clear out those you know, that's what Cristobal cologne means. Cristoforo
right. uh-huh.
cologne was the cleansing with Christ.
Mm.
So they came, excuse me, they came and cleansed with Christ in their name of their God, so that they could achieve the America, the love of riches and wealth.
Right.
And so that's why they came out here to do that. And I think when we look at colonization, it was basically all parts of the world. They were doing it to the other parts of the world, and worked. It basically worked over every place and
mm-hmm.
points of the world. When it comes to the United States, well, it worked to a certain point, but it ran out of land, it ran out of energy and resources, and now it's on its last throes. So I always tell people that that colonization came here to the Western Hemisphere to die, and it's dying, and people don't want to believe it. People think it's blasphemy if or they call us political dissidents or cultural dissidents or, you know, anti-American or whatever we're saying, but that's because it's coming from an addictive mindset saying,
right.
You know, we don't want this to end because we are Americans. We're the ones who love, in that most sordid way, riches and wealth. And we're going to hang on to it no matter what we can do, even kill you and other people who go against us. And that's that dualistic mindset, us and them. So when dualism came with the Bible, came with the colonization of it, came with the capitalization of it, came with the communism of it. And you see that other countries, too, who accept this the way they do, that it's always that dualism. And that they think that's the only way to survive. But that's the path where they cannot survive when they go down that singularity of you know, this is the only God, and I'm going to beat you over the head because your God is wrong. Look what God, our God, gave to us. But the indignation that they have for their children is to not tell them the truth, that their children are going to always feel like they're missing something when they walk around, especially this country, you know. It's not to say that you think about that mankind or humankind is in relationship, is that, of course, we all had that down one time. We all had balance one time. We you know, natives here in the Western Hemisphere also went out of balance. But, you know, the majority did learn through experience.
Right.
And I think that's what, after these 200 years, you think that's a lot of times to experiment with democracy, and so it becomes an experience. Well, the experience is not long enough, not compared to what we've gone through already as Native people, and that's the history, that largest chunk of history compared to a fingernail of colonization and democracy on the rest of the body of Mother Earth, you know, and our time here as Native people.
Mm-hmm.
And you will hear that every place that the Western, that Europeans and whatnot have been here, you know, barely a sliver of a fingernail compared to the rest of the body when Native people have been here. And that is, when you look at it that way, the formalist says, okay, we were here. Well, not just 15,000 years ago or whatever the ice bridge thing came.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our creation stories talk about, if you think about the southern people, and you go into the South Pacific,
right.
And you think about their creation story, also is so similar, you know, in this sense, Lakota people, you know, we're just one of hundreds, if not thousands, of cultures that were here before when Columbus got here.
Right.
And you think about the 5,200 languages that are indigenous.
That's amazing.
And there were more in Columbus during Columbus time. Is that there were more indigenous languages spoken? There were more languages spoken in the Western Hemisphere than the rest of the world combined, because most of the indigenous languages are still intact in the Western Hemisphere. And there are approximately 7,200 languages spoken worldwide. So you're talking a discrepancy of 2/3 of the world's languages are still indigenous, and they have been going extinct ever since, you know, 500 years ago in the Western Hemisphere. So, you know, you're thinking about is this sped up in time? The last 50 years, there have been like 2 to 3 indigenous languages around the world that have gone extinct. So you think about that ratio. There were these languages, and I tell this to people, which I've told to lots of people, is that these languages all do not have the idea of ownership or domination.
That's such a big difference.
Mm-hmm. And they don't have the ideas of marketability. They don't have that, you know, cost. It's almost like in English, and this language that we speak now knows the price of everything, but the value of nothing, you know, and it does that and measures whatever it is in material wealth and things, and that's very, very empty, of emptiness. So it's the haves and have-nots, again, the dualistic thinking.
Right.
And that Bible, I think it's the Bible, and whatever else book it has on there, the Quran or anything, these guys are all fighting over.
Yeah.
They're all fighting over who's truer or not. And we can't do that here. We just, it's impossible. And a learned soul, a learned mind would understand that it's the most stupidest formula alive to think that we have to get our spirituality out of a book. The mind or the brain itself is only a tool. It's only a homing device, you know, to our sensitivity to our surroundings. When I think, I could actually feel it from the heart.
Mm.
Feel it coming from the heart.
Is there energy? And to really sit and think, sometimes I realize that I'm, you know, really exercising my mind, and that's something that gets this, you know, discouraged, I think, in the educational system a lot. Tiogasan, I wanted to ask if you have any recommendations, because I think it's not just the one book is a symbol, you know, as you're saying, it's not that people can get a lot, someone can get a lot out of a Bible or a Quran, but it's when that becomes the only answer, I think is where that trouble begins. Do you have any recommendations for, you know, what we kind of call the settler, people who have been educated colonially or settlers to learn about the indigenous perspective? I mean, I know I've read some history, and I enjoy reading the myths, and of course I learn a lot, you know, when I listen to your radio show, First Voices Indigenous Radio, that brings me up to the date, to the moment. Do you have any suggestions for people to help better kind of grasp the indigenous, you know, the all the things that you're describing as a way of different way of thinking?
Yeah, it's very, very simple, and I think I've described it before to you, is that if people think just with something, mm-hmm. like, you know, we say peace with earth, and
right.
is the other one is the other way that we never say peace on earth, and
right.
one is very, very parasitic when you say on something.
Mm-hmm.
But if you live with something, It is a different description, a different feeling, and it's very basic and simple. And those who want to know more, I think if they're still interested in the philosophy or cosmology,
mm-hmm.
is okay. First of all, is okay. How do we approach this as Lakota people? We are often and still are. When we're speaking in our ceremonies, when we're speaking amongst each other, it's the language. And there are non-natives who come and get exposed to that language and understand the meanings of it. And it has to be with people, native people, who are speaking the language fluently.
Right.
Because you can get among native people who are just grunting just few words here and there, a few words here and there that make the people think that, oh, they are really Indians because they're dressed in feathers and things like that. But that's not the whole idea. The whole idea is to immerse oneself in learning the language, because then you'll see the big differences in feeling language, and the difference between that and a an emotional language. English is very, very emotional. Because it's controlling the emotions, and so we're taught to separate that, the dualisms,
right.
feelings and emotions. So if I was to recommend some things, an easier way to do it, but it seems to be that we want to more have the answer at hand. So here we go. Let's make books. Let's read the book. The book will tell you this and that, and it won't give you the total feeling of it. We'll give you the knowledge and information, and so we'll think that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So the books that I would recommend, anything by Vine Deloria Jr.
Oh yeah.
Anything by him.
Mm-hmm.
He's got about 40 books out there.
Yeah.
And from his very early works to his latest works before he died in. 2005 or 2008, I don't know. But he's one, and then you'll get a sense of how we look at Americana or the rest of the world, and then how we can see the history and the ignorance of us, America, as, you know, thinking that they are intelligent and knowledgeable and all wise and all knowing, and and things like this, and you will see that, that, you know, the addictive process, when we cannot fess up. I think it was also Noam Chomsky who also said that the more educated you are, and he's talking about Westerners and Americans, and the more educated you are, the more you tend, the more capable you are of being able to hide and deny the knowledge of native people, and especially in this country.
Wow, that's, yeah, it's so similar to one of the Taoist, in the Tao Te Ching, the Taoist philosophy that mentions about unlearning, which I think is saying the same thing in different words. It's about, you know, just being aware and being in the moment, relating, not just going by, you know, all this information that you have in your head. I think one of the best mantras that you had mentioned was relational versus rational. That helps me remember to, it's sort of like a left brain, right brain thing, where, you know, the rational helps me know where to be, get, you know, push this button, get there on time, but it's the relational that's really kind of keeping it, keeping things flowing.
Yeah, and you feel more accepted with relational than, you know, you can see, even like in this building that I'm in, the so-called objects around. Each has an energy, and I'm well aware of that. But if I was to just ignore it and think I'm here alone, you know, everything is just dead. Everything becomes objects. Everything becomes useless.
Yeah.
And, you know, so in a disconnecting of thinking is now I wonder why I'm feeling so lonely. I wonder why, okay, I got to go take that picture frame apart and see what makes it tick. And, you know, looking for the energy of it, and yet you're dismantling the energy all the time rather than accepting it, the beauty for what it is. And so we're disconnecting ourselves quite a lot, quite a bit in English, a lot. And people think that I'm putting down English. It just the differences that I want to expose to people is,
right,
of course, the relational and the rational. The rational is about material, is about owning it and measuring and weighing and counting and possessing and how you're going to do all of those things. And it's basically that you seem like it's more like a fearful way of thinking, because you have to just kind of interchange everything all the time in order to survive. And it's a frenzied way of living, and there's no connecting earth. So, you know, science has a lot to do with that. Science has become the religion. So we're going to find the answers in books. And those books are always controlled. It's always controlled by the people who basically are want you to get away, but give you a little bit, get away from that original way of thinking,
right,
that metaphorical way of thinking.
Oh yeah.
And want to give you just a little bit of, you know, well, if you get this degree, and if you get that degree, well, there's the educational process has gone so far. I think it's gone as far as it can, but it still has to continue to give people tidbits of it's new, and that we're going to discover, we're going to go on to other planets. But you know, all the time they're distracting people, and they are developing technology to such a small, I guess you call it nanotechnology now. They have developed it already, and it's here. The people are so away from thinking independently that we think that, okay, but what benefit can we get out of nanotechnology? And so they're looking at that rather than the actual loss of spirit, the actual loss of connection to Mother Earth, because that's what it's all about, is to get us all away from thinking naturally. All of us, native people included, because we're at the edge of the cliff also now, because, you know, that's where colonization eventually had to take us. But the sea monk, it's going to die. Colonization has to die.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
and because there was no other land, that could actually come to, except for Turtle Island. Turtle Island has a spiritual wherewithal, the power, if you will, to be able to withstand colonization. And colonization now is dying, and you can see it. It's in capitalism, it's in all of that, but it's dying. No other place, because the energy of prayer has been so, it's been so vast here. You know, you can think about numbers, but that's another way of thinking. Oh, they're, how can you native people say that? You only barely 3 million of us, but we don't think about those numbers. And it's the elder Orrin Lyons who, in modern day, has put it so eloquently: is that we're not outnumbered. We have the tree is our brother.
Mm-hmm.
The bear is, you know, all these things are our brothers. So we're not outnumbered. they are fighting back and will fight back and have been fighting back, and we just haven't seen that. Because if we as Native people know that, we can communicate with that tree and that bear, you know, in our languages.
That was one of the best news stories I heard recently, was they were going to do some more drilling in the Arctic, and part of the reason they stopped was the ice floes. I don't know the details, but I guess, you know, the actual nature of the ice itself was, you know, going up in their face, and that plus a lot of people protesting helped them decide to stop the drilling, at least for now. So, you know, that's exactly what you're saying, that, again, with the thinking, like, you know, like you're saying, to think you're alone is a psychological trap, and, you know, looking outside oneself and starting to connect the dots is one of the keys.
Yeah.
I want to shift and talk a little, you know, have the sort of like the second part of this, to talk a little bit about your writing, and how you, you know, through your writing try to convey, you know, some of what you're saying quite eloquently, and I know I'm going to have to listen to it a bunch of times because there's so much in it. I remember one time when I showed you the anthology that the All Book Books published, the Unoccupy Movement, and I showed you one of your pieces. And when the book just came out, and your response was, "Did I write that?" And it was funny because that's so much what a lot of writers say is that, you know, even when I read some of my own stuff, it's like, I don't remember writing that. So maybe you could talk about that, or even just if you felt like reading a part of the thoughts on the occupations in the book. That's a page 37, you know, or just talk about your process, you know, how you write, how that comes through for you.
Oh, well, I don't have my books to read from right now.
Oh, that's okay.
Maybe you can refer to page 37, what that contains.
That was you, it's called Thoughts on the Occupations, and basically, you know, you're expressing that the, again, the Occupy movement, some of it is coming from a sense of, you know, privilege within the system itself, and that, you know, Mother Earth needs to be put first as far as really resolving things.
Yeah, okay, I think I recall. I think I said something about the there will be those who will defend the system at all costs, and then, then those who will sort of hold that same system that give them the benefits that their former, you know, maybe the generations before had, and then that they will hold it in dismay and you know, protest, and but you know they are still coming from the throes of colonization, and will hang on to whatever it is, and you know, come from that. But and they will say those things like another world is possible.
Right. Yeah. That's there are those who say the other world is, but the other world is already here. It has always been here.
Yeah.
This is the reality called Turtle Island.
Yeah.
You know, again, you're expressing something that goes way way back in time compared to the, you know, a lot of the Western mentality.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about the Occupy movement, it's also it's allowed to occupy. Of course, that's and the people who are in control, I'd say, of democracy, of colonization, are of course giggling and laughing and smirking and all these things because. It's like, if you study the psychology of colonization, if you study the colony, the constitution of this country, it's like, okay, we can allow them to do that. It's still defined within our constitution, so it's still part of colonization. So we will let them do that, you know, and out of that we'll put in our little infiltrators, and out of that will come, you know, another sort of formula that we can figure out for them. Therefore, they're still within the confines of colonization or constitution. So the people that are being fooled also think, we're doing a good thing because they did something in the 60s and nothing has changed for Mother Earth. In fact, things are just buried deeper, because, you know, it's going to be written down in history when these guys who are young are in 10, 20, 30 years down the road. We did have generations, and, you know, they're going to rest on the laurels of, you know, we occupied. But, you know, I don't think anything's going to be any better, if you say that that way, for Mother Earth. Things are just not going to continue the way it is, and that's not up to the humans to do that. And they can't change anything, no matter how much they bomb each other out because of the word of God, that Mother Earth is ultimately in control.
Yeah.
And so things are going to happen to where it's not going to be a bomb drop in another country. It's going to be about Mother Earth is going to move and shake and rattle and roll, and this is what is going to happen. And I think she's kind of tired of us, you know, trying to figure it out. And it's a Koyaanisqatsi, you know, it's a samsara. That's all it's
right,
about.
The Mahamaya, the great illusion. That, again, that's the from the Hindu. That illusion is it's all the traditions seem to connect. When I hear you talk from the native perspective, it reminds me of other traditions that I've learned, where the materiality is the great illusion.
It's always going to be the great illusion, as long as it's based on materialism and war, and based on God. Because if you think about God and the way they do as that dogma is like it's not here on Earth. It's someplace out there. Maybe in a way they're reaching back into their DNA, saying that we come from distant galaxies or whatever, and therefore we can use that as a distraction to say that UFOs are coming from here and Jesus and heaven are out there, and you know, everything is coming from over there. So it distracts you from Mother Earth. Like Mother Earth is the fine-tuned star that she is, you know, she's always going to keep in tune, in contact with everything else. Of course, that's a given, that she's a living being.
Right.
And so, therefore, the other things out there, which are in different life forms, different planets, so to speak, have different life forms to it also. They also emit radio waves. They also have energy. So it doesn't always have to be like Mother Earth is the only living being. That's the only way we understand it, because we come from Mother Earth. But when you're talking about Mars or another planet, they also have their life forms too.
Sure, sure.
It's just not defined. You know, it's like we had one life form, then there'd only be humans on Earth and nothing else. You know, so I think they've got it wrong when they continue to talk about here, let's occupy this and occupy that, and all they're talking about is give us a tax break, give us a better health insurance, give us, gimme.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's about. And then they'll attach other things, like they're really concerned, like they're very altruistic, environment. But Mother Earth has always has to be, and no matter what agenda there is out there, what political manifesto is out there, Mother Earth always has to be at the forefront of everything, no matter what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key. That's the agenda, because you see that if native people are always putting that first, and of course we know the source of life, but when you become a resource like the environment, when you become a resource like, you know, where they turn things, they divide things, they become resources that as if they were going to be there forever. Well, our mindset has gone away. The mindset of this country has gone to the loony bin. It's out there. It's already the insane asylum. It's already there.
Yeah. I won't argue with you there.
And it cannot continue to coexist with Mother Earth. So you're talking about colonialism. You're talking about, you know, the occupation. It's just another form of colonialism, because it occupy. Let's occupy Terlila. Let's occupy. That's what Columbus did. That's what he allowed others to come and do, to occupy a country. But to occupy something is temporary. And I think about the temporariness of this thinking. It's
exactly.
Only been here, 500 years?
Yeah.
And it's not nothing. You know, and of course, people who want to belong somewhere will write its own history and then forget about the other history that was here and make up little myths and lies. Oh, here's our science that proves that you came from over the Bering Sea, and there's our science that say, you know, and of course there may be some new type of thought processes that are combining science and indigenous thinking.
Right.
But, you know, what was here before that? There was also our indigenous thinking contained science, because it had to. It's relational.
Yeah.
It wasn't the other way around, where it was only science and forget about indigenous ways of thinking.
Yeah, that's why even when I was thinking of questions to ask you and I started to frame a question, the whole relational thing came to mind. And it's like, well, it's hard to just say ask you about writing, because I know that that's connected. It's connected with everything. So it's sometimes hard to isolate, you know, one thing. So that is where I especially appreciate that relational way of approach. It reminds me to pause a moment and connect the dots before just, you know, going ahead in a straight line. Another of your books, Children of the Sun, Prosatry Unplugged, you mention, just similar to what you've been talking about, in order for Mother Earth to continue to live, men have to give up their male ego and admit that the religions, the politics, the patriarchy in general is at the fault. We must turn our machismos into the fodder that it is and let the seeds grow in the manner that the Creator intended. So that's kind of a, you know, poetic way of saying what you've just been saying, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's just, when you look at it, it's a natural process. We have to think in those natural processes, and it's almost like, what happens when we think natural, when we refer, in this language of English, what we refer to natural, we kind of, it's a thing removed. What's nature?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and in Lakota, we don't have a word for nature, because it's us.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, we can't think of it in that way of I don't know. It's just impossible. I don't know how to describe it. I guess there's no way to describe it in Lakota.
Mm-hmm.
But in even in English, it's like it's hard to, like, how can we say that there's a national park over there? You know, how can we say that, you know, there's a river over there? You know, that river. We can't even say that river.
Mm.
You know, we can say the river is us,
right.
Or, you know, without objectifying it. And it just stumps me sometimes. How can we think about nature without everything we do is a natural process.
Right.
Everything we do, even when you and I are talking about the technicals and the writing and stuff, we're doing it, if you could see it this way, in a relationship, we are talking about a natural process.
Mm-hmm.
And we're using the tools of a natural process, but because we have gotten away from that natural process, it's not obvious to us that we have to use technology in a smaller, more useful way rather than one of a controlling. We're supposed to communicate. We have many ways of communicating.
Right.
And you see that other species, plants, evolve, and they adapt. That's all evolution is adapting, not adopting.
Hmm.
But they adapt to the sun. They adapt to temperatures.
Right.
You know, and they adapt. In indigenous peoples, we can't. There's one thing that we cannot do. Adopt.
Right.
Is this other way of thinking, the disconnecting way. How can you take, again, the Lakota people, and disconnect them? Well, that's what this country did. It disconnected the Lakota people, and so that was our. If one day your people are connecting, and in another country, another people, mindset, religion, science, everything comes and just wipes it out, and the Lakota people are still in shock, because we can't live, we can't, our food, everything is gone, and you have a people that will not survive if we cannot connect to
right.
our places.
Yeah.
It's like, we can't develop that. We can't understand how that could happen, because it's not a natural way to do things.
Yeah, it's a trauma. It's like a trauma or a post-traumatic stress that, what all the work you do and other people, it's helping to heal, helping to heal some of that. What you were saying about the nature, and I noticed that I try to put that in my writings, that when I put a stick in the ground near the morning glory flower, and the vine is facing, say, one direction, and I put the stick in, and literally like a half an hour or an hour later, I'm noticing that the vine has turned and is about to, it's going to go start coiling around the stick. Mm-hmm. Now that to me is like what you were describing, that nature's knows things and speaks in a different language. So those are things I find fascinating, just experience-wise. But I try to put those in my writing to remind people of that that connection, the connectedness. So I know that's some of what you're writing and all the work that you do. The music, I was thinking about your music. Eventually, in a little while, I'm going to go out with a song from your album Kasa. Is that how you say it, Kasa?
Yeah.
And I was thinking about your music, and it's some of the oldest music of this land. The native music is, I think, when people hear it, it's a good way to connect with the vibrations of the earth, because they say American music comes from jazz and the blues, and that track of it does, but to listen to any kind of indigenous music is to connect with the vibrations of the earth that go way, way back.
Yeah, that's totally what it is, But I think music is the poetry of all of us, and no matter where it comes from, and no one has claim or right to it. You just we have to understand, of course, that vibration of Earth has that kind of music, and over here had a certain type of music, but we're still applying other musics. Even jazz has native orientation. People don't understand that, that way of it feels more natural. That's more people get into it. And more relaxing for people. I think that's what it's about too. It can be exciting as well, but I think it's because music is played to us all the time. That those notes of Mother Nature, of the sun, of everything around us. I mean, the butterflies, the hundreds of butterflies that have been flying over me while we were speaking.
Right.
Those big, I don't know what they are, monarchs or whatever, but.
Oh, the orange and black.
Yeah,
the monarch. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, they're.
Yeah.
Hundreds of them.
Now, the Kasa means that something like triumph through struggle. Is that what I remember?
It actually means, in the root meaning of it, means trouble.
Okay.
But the evolved meaning is wisdom out of trouble.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, that one track I was listening one night, that's another little chapbook that I published with All Book Books. I was listening to the CD that your group Ghost Horse made, and there's one that's a spoken word piece, and that became, one of the chapbooks, because just listening to it, it was like, this has to be on paper. And the there's a refrain in it that stands out to me, regardless of the situation, you say regardless of the situation. And it reminds me that we can come up with all these excuses, but like you said, the capitalism and the earth, that things need, things are changing, and we need to do that no matter what. And that was hearing the lines. You have this is an urgent necessity, a dire need that you as an individual take the responsibility of maintaining the earth life. Now, when I heard that, I was like, okay, what can I do? And that's that's where I got the idea to put that in a book form. But I think, listening to your music or your words or whatever, that, people get what they get. They get what they get from it. I appreciate the, sometimes when I read some of your writings, it's poetic, and other times you come in and you point the finger like, this is what's really going on. This is what we need to do. And that's like one of those things they teach in school, don't be didactic when you write. But I think there is a time to be didactic. And there is a time to point the finger and said, look, folks, this is what's up.
Yeah, it's easy to go, in Lakota, we don't have the word for blame. And so when I'm talking in English, it's merely pointing at the sun, and that's the sun up there. Mm. And you've been telling me to not look at the sun. But this is the way we do it. We either cut to the quick and not beat around the bush and tell you about the truth, what's going on,
mm-hmm.
or we just continue to beat around the bush and keep telling each other lies, and especially the children, because it's easier to tell the children lies rather than the truth, because we want them to also be an illusion and have their car, have their college education, have those things, you know, because that's the way it's been put out there, because there's no other way to think, they think.
Mm-hmm.
But there is another way to think, and it's always been here, and that was to point out the harsh truth of things.
Right.
And when we did that, then that removed that emotional blame thing. And I think we go to that too easily, rather than listening to what people are saying, especially indigenous peoples. Americans tend to say, well, you're angry, you're blaming us for your ills, and it's like, wait, no, our ills are your ills, because it's Mother Earth, it's about
right.
relational anyway.
Right. Yeah, thank you so much for talking, and it's always enlightening to hear you speak and hear the indigenous perspective. It always stretches my mind and all parts of me, you know, that the whole sense of self
yeah.
that I feel expanded by it, and I hope, you know, I'm sure the listeners will get a lot from this, you know, hearing you talk in the conversation. I want to go out, just have you say something. I'm going to play a track from Kasa called Prayer, because a couple of reasons. I want you, you speak a little bit of Lakota in there,
yeah.
so I want people to hear that. I think I recognize one word, Oyate, is that nation?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that could do a whole show on just the respect for all the, you know, each being as a nation, the ant nation, the wind nation. But the word prayer, that's the song. I remember you saying, this, again, it's a way that the language, this is sort of a language barrier, and I find Lakota and other little bits of other indigenous language I've heard, I find it to be naturally poetic. And the way you describe that prayer in Lakota is something like holding the earth in your arms and caring for it?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to say it, but basically that's what it's about, to hold the universe within your arms, care for it in that way, and that's a sense of responsibility. So mm-hmm. Wochekia is basically that. Makasi Tomini is the other term to understand. Maka is the ancient ones, where we came from. So you hold them in your arms and care for it. No matter where you go, you always keep that concept going, and then you understand how you can be so compassionate for other peoples in the way they think also, rather than, you know, but it's about responsibility, as you say, and it's not about the right to God, it's not the right to anything, because we don't have rights, we have responsibility,
right.
which should make me feel like I belong here.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I think it's great advice, you know, just in living daily life, and also in a literary sense, I think it's helpful for writers to remember that, you know, each word that they choose to think about it could be loaded word, or it could not be saying, you know, half of what they want to say.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, one more thing, there's also on that song, before I forget, Lisa Bodner has a beautiful beautiful vocals that'll be played after. There's an event coming up October 8th in New York City called Repairing the Sacred Hoop, if you want to say anything about that, because some listeners are in the New York area.
Oh, I think that's taken from, the idea is taken from Black Elk about healing the sacred hoop and things like that, but repairing it is the way people don't understand it, you know, as far as Americans are concerned. And if we think about how we are going to be living after capitalism or any other isms that can be applied to ism, is what happened before, pre-capitalism. So post-capitalism means that we all have to return to Earth, and as Native peoples, we are going to be the guideposts in order to learn how to live with Mother Earth again.
Right.
And that's the highest form of intelligence, if you will. To doing that, so we're not going to be dismantling capitalism. We're not going to be talking, you know, bad mouthing a government. We're not going to be talking about, you know, anti-American stuff or anything like that. Because as one of our elders said, that, you know, we're not here. We're not about taking or down a government because the multinational corporations
yeah.
have already done that.
Right.
But we're going to be talking about how we are going to survive, you know, when there's no capitalism, when you can't go to the shopping mall. I mean, you know, all those things.
And right.
We're going to be guideposts, basically.
Okay.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, I'll find the link from your site, and I'll put that up, and I'll also put the
awesome.
First Voices Indigenous Radio on the page, and so, you know, people, while they're listening, they can check that out, too.
Going into my 21st year of this.
That's fabulous. It's a wonderful show. I strongly recommend people listen. It's just, you know, you not only connect people around the world, you find out news stories that I haven't heard anywhere. And I think there's a cumulative thing that happens listening to it over time. It really, it's just something that happens that is really learning about the wholeness of the planet.
Yeah, so. I think the difference is I'm not there to be a popular radio show. it just happens.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Tjokesen.
Okay, cool. Thanks, really, Bont. Take care.
All right. You too.
Bye.
Be well.
Bye.
Yeah, I'm getting one.